This is the AdNonTech Podcast, conversations about education, technology, and culture, with Dr. Doug Reed and Dr. Matt Stranick. Thank you for joining us.
My name is Dr. Doug Reed, and I am located in Abigwe, the traditional and unceded territory of the Mi'kmaq people.
My name is Dr. Matthew Stranick, and I am on Treaty No. 8 territory, the traditional meeting grounds and gathering places of our First Nations, Métis, and Inuit peoples. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the latest of the AdNonTech podcast episodes. I've been telling people we're into the 60s at this point, which just goes to show you that we're not even that too far into the semester, and I'm already losing track of some of the finer organization details. But what can I say? We wouldn't have it any other way, I don't think, being as we're committed to being busy and practical both as much as we can on the show, I think it's fair to say. And I also think that may align a little bit with what we're on about in today's episode. I am Matt Stranick, and as ever, the inestimable and utterly indefatigable Doug Reed is here with us as well. And we're tickled pink and possibly even plaid, being that it is the fall season. You might have your plaids out for the fall. How are things, Doug? How's the early fall treating you out in the Prince Edward Island way?
This afternoon was wonderful, and then I took my dog for the walk and got drenched. The clouds came in, and it was like, well, okay, going to be wet. Let's keep the phone dry.
Right. Okay. Were you wearing appropriate, semi-purpose gear, like?
Nope.
It's like I think a Canadian person can be wearing a poncho in any kind of weather, any season, and that is like it'll go unquestioned, right? It's just so I've got a Kiway now. Like I actually have a branded Kiway, like from the 80s.
Wow.
Yeah, man. I went into Mark's Work Warehouse to just grab some work items, and I was like, they are actually making them under the Kiway brand. And moreover, they have this, like, on the packaging, on the tag, they have this, like, attestation to scientifically waterproof and shit. Like, they're making claims to be 100% relative to the, you know. So I don't know if that would, if you had a K-Way kind of, you know, in a fanny pack around your thing, if you'd been, but if ifs and buts were candy and nuts, then something. I've been dropping in. Well, I heard myself saying this to the English class yesterday. I was like, okay, I said, you know, a Simpsons reference. And then I was like, for those of you who are even old enough to remember a Simpsons reference, and because there's, you know, it's the Gen Z. I realized I'm like the majority of my people now are 20 years old, whatever. And that is kind of Gen Z age. Tangents, we got them, folks. Doug, why don't you tell us what we're on about for today's episode?
We are going to talk about STEM education, so science, awesome. Technology, engineering, and mathematics. That's where I wanted to dig in. So,
and why for the STEM on this particular occasion? What's put that into your noggin as a possible thing that we could talk about? Because we definitely will go into this. We actually tried to run a version of this last weekend, folks, for behind the scenes. For those who are wondering about what goes on behind the show, which is probably not very many of you, but still, the thing now is we were defeated by sketchy internet, basically, whether at my hotel end, which is what I suspect, or, you know, the sketchy maritime internet actually has its own category on our metadata for the show. such as we were thwarted by it, challenged by it a bit over the past year while I was based in Atlanta, Canada for a little while, for those keeping track at home. We kind of got through a half of an episode, which we have preserved. I've downloaded it to my folder on my computer, and we're going to do like a meta episode, I think is what we described at the end of that, didn't we, Doug? You were like, yeah, we better save that for later use. And I'm like, yeah, we can prank and stuff. You know, like, again, for those who are old enough to remember, during the 80s sitcoms and the 90s sitcoms, every, like, you know, 100 episodes or something, they'd have a, oh, let's reminisce, you know, like, you know, and who's the boss? They get stuck in a log cabin and they have nothing to do because the electricity goes out and they're like, you know, anyway. Lord, I digress.
And that started in 1936, I believe. There was one, you know, those movie serials that they used to do, and somebody was told, okay, you have to do 10 episodes of something, but they only give enough money for 8. So episode 5, they chunked up the first 4 like as a recap episode, and just to try to save money. And then people were like, wow, what a great idea. Let's do that.
And then they invented Moodle. We can shoehorn so many more people into these courses by adding an online add-on. It's not, you know, educational learning material anymore. It's content. It's real interesting now, again, just sort of having spent 10 years kind of at the back end or just doing kind of stuff outside the classroom, just sort of getting a new perspective on some of this stuff that we've talked about. And I've been really pleased to see that some of the approaches and things that we've been kind of talking about and advocating for and stuff actually does have a lot of really cool practical application in the classroom. I've just been trying some things. I'm looking forward to after next semester, like after I get some different courses or whatever, being able to almost do like a post-mortem on the instructional design for what I've done here for a blended class, because I think actually it's going to be pretty, I don't know, could be a value to other people.
Yeah.
Doug, yes. This isn't me just going on about my awesome teaching job, I swear. STEM is extremely important. I think there's a lot of emphasis placed on it lately. It's a timely topic. It's a relevant topic. Certainly, we both work at colleges, and so there is, I think, an emphasis within the wider curricular endeavor of colleges to kind of have, like within their mandate, to have practical, hands-on learning sort of experiences, which I think tend to be associated with STEM largely than perhaps in other more maybe more so than the humanities, let's say, or whatever, right? Or perhaps even the social sciences, even though I'm just kind of playing devil's advocate on that standpoint. So, bro.
And both of us have doctorates with technology in the title. So.
Yours was distance education.
No, mine was educational computing.
Educational computing. There we go.
Because in Australia, they named it in the 80s. And in North America, they turned it into technology. And in Australia, they just didn't bother. They're like, nah, that term's fine. We know what it means.
The more you talk about the context of working there, I just think like the whole Southern Hemisphere's, you know, approach to distance education generally out of necessity would provide just so many, you know, interesting vantage points. And I think probably a worthwhile endeavor, you know, would just even be like lining up the jargon, you know, like Oceania jargon versus North American jargon or whatnot, just for the proverbial giggles and so forth, right? It'd be kind of...
Oh, yeah. I have I just saw it. It's not right here, but it's called the Dinkum Dictionary. And it's all the Australian words and what they mean when you translate them to English.
Oh.
So there's a bunch of stuff like that. Like I had a friend of mine. It was after work one day and she's like, oh, I had a blue at work. right? And I'm like, in my head, it was like a Labatt's Blue. So she had a beer at work. And I'm like, you drank at work? And she's like, what are you talking about? I said, you just said you had a blue. And she's like, I had a fight. And I'm like, how does fight equal blue? And then she's like, well, in the comic books, it's blue language. It's language that would get circled by the censor, right, with a blue marker or a blue grease pencil. And so they just use that term. They use a blue means having a fight. Well, at least that's in Western Australia, they were doing that to me.
Might be different in Eastern Australia.
Yeah. They're two different worlds. They're very different.
Any wombats and kangaroos and weird snakes and spiders apart. My goodness. Jump over a few, you know, Mad Max extras in the desert there, and you know, away you get.
Absolutely.
Dang. Well, double dang. So are we ready to talk about here your first reference from the U.S. Department of Education, my friend?
Yes. Yes. In 2007, they did a report on academic competitiveness. And they are initially describing what STEM is. And it's science, technology, engineering, math, education programs. And it's focused everywhere. It's focused at K-12. It's focused at university. It's focused as postgraduate. And it includes adult education. So it is broad.
Question. From your reading of that, sir, I wonder how they are defining or otherwise operationalizing the term competitive. Like, how do they mean? Like, competitive, like, within, like, so, like, in Korea, they have these insane, kind of end of high school achievement tests, right? And so they're competing against each other effectively because only, like, the top of the top of the top will get to go to, you know, Seoul National University or whatever. Right. And then, so, as opposed to, you know, competitive, like, in a private sector kind of industry way. Like, as per the KPIs, we are, you know, better than this company, but not as much. Again, you know, can I just ask about that, bro?
Yeah, this was more about economic competitiveness.
Okay.
It's about, are we going to produce enough people to be able to do the jobs
to that match the workforce needs of the future? Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
That's cool where beans. They were coming Thank you. From.
Appreciate you, bro.
Yeah, no problem. No problem, because I really understand. I like where you're coming from with that Korean example. That was interesting, but this is the Americans. That's not where they were headed.
Yeah, they have end of high school, like whatever, graduation or, I mean, if you talk about, yeah, I don't know. It's interesting down there. Everything about the States is just like, anyway. Manifest Destiny is not legit, and it's funny how friggin' fallout from that still persists. Bro, we're going to have a U.S. election within, like, while there's an academic semester going on, and I'm going to have classes for the first time. The last time I had classes where there was a U.S. election, like, I actually had it up on the screen. CNN was announcing Obama being elected in the fall of 2008, right? That was, you know, in Qatar. And now, like, you know, whatever, however many years later in my career, there may be a similar moment where, like, you know, come middle of November, still got 3 weeks left of the term or something, I'll just take, like, you know, 15 minutes and, now, let's see if the Orange Menace gets in again, or if Kamala kind of kicks his ass righteously, which is what people will hope. People watching this anyway probably will hope, I would think. But, bro, I'm so...
It's okay. Politics does not interest me. I would like to have to think about politics like 2 or 3 days every 4 years. That's all I want. And I'm just scared it's going to become an everyday occurrence again. And it's for an election I can't vote for.
Right.
So I don't want to get
It's just like all the culture that gets pumped out of the United States, whether you're talking Hollywood movies or books or TV series on Netflix or whatever the crap, is going to be within the wake of this, and it won't be, it won't be like directly referenced, but I mean, again, you could say, well, here's the cinema and narrative of the Trump years versus the non-Trump years versus the Bush years versus the Clinton years versus whatever. I mean, you know, it's just, it sets the tone for a bunch of stuff that it has, you know, impacts on shit we enjoy. So just as a phenomenon, as just pure straight up American weirdness, straight up Hunter S. Thompson, like, this is a freak show on display. Nobody's in charge. What the friggin' heck? It's, you know, a high time to observe that. So for anybody who's like, you know, I don't know, I look for the absurd in human behavior as a source of education and enjoyment for me. I understand other people don't necessarily roll that way and may in fact roll in the opposite directions. But anyway, good Lord, the U.S. Department of Education, you say?
Yes. So with STEM, this was the government body saying, here's what we're talking about, and trying to introduce it. So it really came out of the 1990s, but in 2007, the government grabbed a hold and said, we got to do something with this. And it broke the barriers, and which is part of the weirdness of how this really works. Like, science has very firm boundaries. Technology, firm boundaries. Engineering, really firm boundaries. Mathematics. And this is trying to say, oh, let's do a smattering of all of those. Let's lump them all together. And then they didn't just lump that together. Let's lump in kindergarten to 12, public school. Let's lump in undergrad, university. Let's pump in postgrads. Let's pump in adult ed on top of that. It's like they got rid of every silo. They got rid of every structure. And it kind of shows with how the evolution of things have gone since 2007. So I just like to have that as the, like, a starting point at least.
Yeah, absolutely. That's highly legit. Sector wide, as it were, of a time and place. And I mean, when we talked with Tony Bates, right? I mean, one of the cool things that he had the ability to do within his very long, very significant, very distinguished career, because, like, again, I see his stuff come up on LinkedIn sometimes. He had a really good blog post come up just like within the past week, just about sort of he's got this series, and he talked to us on the interview, you probably remember, about like his personal dialogue about his career, which he sort of described to us and what he mentions in his post, were are intended, you know, primarily for his family to kind of give some context. It's, you know, he's in his 80s, right? But then also, you know, to weigh in on what's cool about the blog post is he kind of weighs in on a time and place at his institution in UBC. And then he invites others who may have been around of the era to kind of weigh in. And the comments, like, on the blog post are from some really cool, distinguished people that I wouldn't have necessarily known about, you know, but people who have been in the, you know, management and whatever within higher ed at pretty key institutions and pretty key roles, kind of shaping what, you know, has this country, what this country's kind of outputs are for a very significant part of education. And particularly when the internet is during these years, as is covered by the U.S. report that you're sharing here, during a very key period where the internet just went from being nice to have or novelty, like vis-a-vis the mid-90s and so forth, to essential in all aspects of anything to do with the practical running of your life, which is where we got to about 2010 thereabouts, right? So that whole transitionary period, the whole web 2.0-ish kind of time, you know, and so with Tony, he's like, he's got to operate system-wide within his merit, right, within his purview, right? And just it's cool to be able to kind of open things up from, you know, a wide perspective.
Oh, yeah. And part of that change, the process of change that's happening, is teachers and profs used to be preparing people for a job at the other end. That happens a lot, right? That's a constant theme. We've talked about it on the podcast before. And one of the changes that all of this is happened with teachers and profs, now we're preparing students and we don't know what the job's going to be. because the job hasn't been invented yet. So it's a change from here, you need to know that content, to you need to have these skills.
Right.
That's kind of the shift that's
occurred. An awesome way of putting it, Doug. Moving from a content-based knowledge model to a sort of process sort of oriented one. And I think that kind of aligns with how we've sort of taken the view of technology for learning. You know, we've kind of emphasized, I think, that technology is a product of mental cognitive action, right? And so you have to have clarity in your cognitive action for the technology, even at the level where you're expressing something on a piece of paper with a pen. I mean, that's an act of technology. So we tend to view technology, you know, for learning as a process rather than, you know, an application of technology as this friggin' abstract entity. It's actually anything that gets it from, you know, an individual's single cognition to something that's transferable to any one other person in any format whatsoever, is effectively a technology, right? You know, human wetware, right? The larynx, the mouth, you know. That's how culture persisted in the Athabasca region for 11,000 years, right? There have been people living in this part of Canada where I am now. You know, I put it on my little class website. The first thing that I could find, like, is a link from CBC saying archaeological scientists have basically verified that for 11,000 years, people have been living in this area. And that's been my lead-in for my classes, right? That's where I've been mentioning, because we're doing like a two-week thing on Indigenous narrative literature before we get into other formats. You know, so technology is an expression in whatever way, right? And the technology that evolved over millions of years and thousands of years, the, you know, mouth and the, like, throat structure and the, you know, just the little tweaks in the gray matter to enable that. I mean, that's wetware. That's like, you know, anyway, bro. You're flaring up the synapses on some good stuff here, my friend.
That's my goal. That's what I have to offer. So I'd like to jump to Brown 2012.
Please do.
The current status of STEM education research. And what's cool is in 5 years, since 2007 to 2012, suddenly there's a journal of STEM education. And it's been, that was 13 years old at the time. So STEM education's been around, really. That term's been around for whatever.
I think if you were to scope the entire resources for this show, I think you've cited this one before, this journal, I think, right? In some of the other notes that we've had. Maybe you haven't. I feel like I maybe that. No?
Don't
okay.
remember. Maybe.
No, that's. We're due for a comprehensive lit review, I think, now that we're 60-something episodes in.
Yep.
If there's any aspiring wannabe grad students who are looking to enhance their profile for slim to no dollars and a fair amount of internet prestige, hook us up. Tim Horton's coupon for anybody who wants to potentially help us with a site-wide lit review. Just putting it out there, bro. Anyway.
So what Brown comes up with in 2012, so that's only 12 years ago, talking about how STEM education means researchers must continually look at research from outside their specific discipline. And it's hard, right? Like if you have come up through a very specific discipline, it's hard to do that. It's like trying to decolonialize education and decolonialize structures. Like that structure's in place. Breaking out is scary, and you're going to get a lot of resistance. And what do you mean? I'm going to go do some new thing. But I love the fact that it's interdisciplinary.
Yes.
I love the concept that ideas are better. If everybody's in their own little silo, then you only – I already know what that echo chamber says, right? I want to go someplace else and have all kinds of different ideas bounce off. I think that's how the learning helps. I think that's how we get someplace better. And I just wanted to bring it up because I love the interdisciplinary nature of where STEM's headed and how they try to knock down some barriers.
That is absolutely legit, and I'm glad you brought that up. And I realized I've been professionally in some way a teacher for 18 years at this point. But then when I add on like all the times I was doing like extra jobs and contracts and shit, I just kind of round that up to 20 years. And so I actually was thinking, you know, kind of now that I'm at the front of the classroom for the first time in a while, like, what do I bring to this situation? You know, like I'm entering my third decade as an educator, which is, you know, like really, I'm at the beginning of decade three for all intents and purposes right now. So it's like, what can I bring to this? And what has been a theme throughout my career up until now? I've been asking students to do these kind of, well, earlier in the term, I was asking students to do these like autobiography of my reading life kind of thing, right? Just 3 to 5 paragraphs talking about favorite writers, formative experiences. And when I look at the times that I've had across, you know, a 2 decades career as an educator, it's the interdisciplinary stuff that you mentioned here that's really kept me motivated. It's the stuff that's been really kind of like, how do we bring in more perspectives? How do we make this thing more relevant and inclusive? And whether that's at a project level or even just like on a little, you know, curricular collab, one of my best experiences as a teacher was getting to teach in co-teach in an engineering technology program in Qatar, right? And I was like the APA and writing expert guy, even though I should have had him using IEEE documentation, but whatever. And then the other was an individual who was doing the technical stuff. And those shared lectures, man, I enjoyed the crap out of those. And, I mean, that was pretty early in my career. So interdisciplinary stuff is just makes the world go round in my world. So
it does. I love teaching engineers. When I was in Australia, I taught at the Curtin University of Technology. And I taught engineers. And it was awesome.
It's a
very specific way of thinking.
It's singular. Everything they do as a field, and then even like you get like an engineer. I work with like a few different streams of engineering people. I'm like, yeah, we're the telecom people. We don't have any because you know like what do you compare civil engineering to structural engineering to, you know, like network engineering, and it's all like idiosyncratic in the first place and specific because it's engineering strictly as a thing, but then there's all these kind of breakout and sort of sub areas which are again worlds unto themselves. And so I've never met any engineer or engineering student who's similar to any other, and that's the commonality. They're all so different from each other individually and within a discipline. And as a discipline, God, especially as a discipline, Jesus. Sorry, bro. Engineers.
The engineers I taught were all really clever, really interested.
High functioning, smart people. Every one of them. That's something else. That's true. Yeah.
And I taught a couple of classes. One of the classes, every guy had the same haircut. Like they all had the identical, like shaved top, the flat top kind of haircut with it all. I don't know if that was just the era
maybe they got like a lapel pin just kind of that you're not showing there. Maybe they got like the, before they come into class, they're doing the shakes and the, you know, like the stonemasons. There's a Simpsons reference. The stonemasons. Do you remember the stonemasons episode?
Oh, I remember it. I remember that. I'm that age. Just so you know, I've started my fourth decade. I blew past 3 full decades, and I'm on to my fourth decade.
Bickety-bam! Like a boss. See, again, this is where I've been very selective in my career, where when I find people who are a bit further ahead in terms of their professional trajectory, if they have a legit trajectory, then I always am just like, huh, this person has had, you know, X, Y, and Z kind of experiences. You know, I'm like, I should sort of benefit from either the credibility associated with the other individual and or the content knowledge, but really the credibility. You know, it's like when we started this thing, I was coming off being like knocked around, knocked off the island, from Thompson Rivers. And that was just a very painful professional and personal experience, more so personally even, I think. And this show just really has helped me kind of regain my balance. And I mean, now, again, I've actually been using, episodes in the classroom. Like I've been showing some of the writers' conversations, particularly, from this past summer in the class, because like it's a literature class and these are practicing active writers and academics, right? So, I mean, the whole thing about this coming out of, like, for both of us, just kind of a place of, you know, amused disgruntlement, I think, you know, like something to do and also sort of something else to do. But now it's just completely taken on its own other thing. And it's cool to be kind of where I like how you put it. We're at the beginning of season three of this. I wasn't thinking of them in terms of seasons until you mentioned that. And I'm like, yeah, I suppose it is, right? Three academic years, give or take, that we're getting into with this stuff. Yeah. Anyway, bro, time for reflection, I suppose, what you put me on here.
No worries. Yeah, so man. I'm going to jump to Blakely and Howell, 2015. And they have a historic look back. They do the STEM narrative of 15 years of STEM in Australia. And they talk again about how it came out of the U.S. in the 1990s, and it's, what are we going to do? We're not going to have enough graduates to be able to do all these jobs, but we don't even know what the jobs are yet, and oh my goodness. And there's always like a panic there. It drives me a little bonkers, because there's many reasons to get an education. There's many, many, many reasons to get an education. And this is focused on get the job.
It's reductionist to the extreme. Yeah.
Yeah. And that drives me nuts, because that is not my reason. I wanted to learn more. I wanted to test myself and challenge myself.
I wanted to
help people better. Like that's what I wanted.
Very much.
So it's very interesting that they've got this other way of looking at it. This very employment-based way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's the goggles. You know, do not use your peripheral vision. You know, like that's kind of, I hear you, bro. Very much so.
And another part of this article showed that they can make the change. They can look, the STEM people can look at things and say, that's not working. Okay, let's make the shift. Let's adjust. But they've never adjusted for that very employment-focused grounding. Because initially, STEM wasn't called STEM. It was SMET.
One's a better acronym than the other. You know, yeah, one's more euphonious, I suppose. Yeah.
Yeah. If it was SMET, your background imaging makes no sense. But
have to be a lot more elaborate and creative and use a lot more chicanery to make the connection. Whereas I hope, the visual pun isn't lost on anybody here. I mean, sighted individuals who can watch this on an internet device, you know. Anyway, yeah, there's a whole lot of, like, if we were to do an accessibility audit on our thing, I'd be probably deeply ashamed, actually. I think if we, you know, if as the person who does the direction for this endeavor, man, if you ever wanted to just do, like, let's do a full UDL episode, that might be a nice excuse to, like, friggin' just go through not everything we've done, but, like, you know, use, like, the BC campus tools and stuff like that to actually, you know, here's how you check it. And, like, you know, I've been telling students to do their writing because I have them write every single week. And what I've been telling them, you know, is use Microsoft Word. And I know for sure there's a lot of the accessibility features in Microsoft Word that, I mean, I don't even know how they work. I'm just used to just save it on the document default, which I've been just using kind of uncritically. But now, you know, that my stuff is going out to way more students, more people on the regular, you know, it's anyway, bro. I don't know how I got onto accessibility from all that, but
accessibility really matters. And it's part of it is, how do we use the tool of word?
Yes.
Like I taught my nephew how do you do APA formatted papers. And he was like, what do you mean use a template? What do you mean? It's like, if you use the template, everything just works. It's just right. You don't have to learn anything. He was a big fan of not having to learn it because all the formatting was just right. If you use the right dot file.
Set it and forget it. Yeah. Yeah. Use just once and destroy, to use the jargon for needles.
That's really helpful. I got a new phone. My old phone was old. So I just got a new phone. Well, new to me phone.
Congrats, I guess.
I don't know my passwords. I don't know my passwords for Facebook. I don't know my password for Reddit. Like, so it's great. I can't look at Reddit or Facebook on my phone anymore. It is a fantastic friction that has reduced my random staring at the device. So
I'm telling you, man, I'm almost at the point where the next phone I'm going to get is going to be a friggin' flip phone. Like, I don't want an internet browser on the phone. I just want to be able to send, you know, text messages to and from my kids and call anywhere in Canada on the best network possible. And, like, all the friggin' apps and just dopamine traps, that's what they are. You know, like, just like, these little things that just grab, like, fractions of seconds or fractions of minutes out of your time. And then you look at them and you got... Man, I spent so many friggin' hours just with this ridiculous non-content friggin' scrolling and interface. Like, bleh. I could have read War and Peace or some shit, you know? I could have learned how to drive a car. I could have, like, you know, like, taught myself half the language or some friggin' thing, right? It's bleh. Anyway, bro.
Yesterday afternoon, I built a potting bench.
Fucking A.
In my shed. In my little garden shed.
Well done.
And instead of random crud just sitting on the floor, now everything's organized. There's shelves.
Yes.
Everything's up and out of the way. I used $21 worth of wood, and everything else was stuff I had lying around. So I used a whole lot of STEM kind of stuff. I needed the science. I needed the engineering. I needed the math. Like, and then, of course, it didn't work the way I wanted because of whatever. But with the dopamine trap going on, I wouldn't have got there.
Right.
So,
can we tag that dopamine trap thing? I don't think it's especially brilliant, but I think it may kind of capture something we may want to revisit.
Not to put a spoiler alert on it, but if you go down to the phrase of the podcast, that might already be typed there.
Well, double gosh dang. Oh, and I'm seeing some very legit visuals here.
Yes, okay. But we have two more articles. We have two more articles before we get there.
Okie doke. Which are?
So we have Freeman, Markinson, and Teitler, 2019. Yep. And it's an international view of STEM ed. So what they're taking a look at, so these aren't North Americans. These are people from someplace else, and what they're really talking about is how it's such an obvious government effort worldwide to insert STEM everywhere they can possibly insert it, right? And they control the money and they control the curriculum, so it's a thing now. it's just a thing.
Well, you're saying as soon as you start talking about insertion, I'm just this low class, like lower middle class, pathetic, you know, dude. And so I'm like, huh, I'm about, you know, reaching the age where I should be getting my annual prostate check, you know, or whatever. Inserting the stem, so to speak, figuratively and literally. I mean, that's like a very small advanced camera that goes up there. That required science, technology, engineering, and math for sure. Inserting the STEM.
It's different now. They do stool tests.
I've never even had it once, so I don't even know. I mean, that's what I'm saying. I should have it now. I should be having it, so I don't even know. But
yeah. So back to Freeman et al.
Please.
And they're talking about how the governments have really set up legislation and said, this is our priority. Here's how we're going. And it comes right down to industry innovation and commercialization, right? They're not pretending it's anything but that. It's 100% economic. And again, that drives me bonkers, because then where do the arts fit in that? And we'll talk about the arts next week, but I just needed to mention.
Is this a two-part episode, Doug? Are we in the first of a two-part episode? Is this closing now?
Yeah, we're going to go resurrect last week's attempt, and we'll talk about STEAM education next week. And then, so that's where we can get to talk about the arts a little more.
Well, gosh, double dang. I'm stoked at having the wider concept that's been sitting right in front of me now being explicitly revealed as sort of, at the end where it's like the monkey that killed the person in the room morgue, like, it was the monkey. It's like, all these MacGuffins you've been kind of putting out, all these false leads. I'm so glad that part of my thing involves, like, a significant amount of my thing involves narratives and story again, man. It's very, it's a pretty cool thing for various levels for me. But I mean, just the fact that, like, that's something I can now talk about, you know, like I can show trailers from whatever film in class, and that's part of the legit curriculum. I'm really like, It's been a while since I've been able to kind of do something within the context of my work that I would be like kind of doing on my own time anyway. Right. So that to me sort of speaks to like, well, as you put it earlier in the episode, you know, it's about treating education as an entire endeavor. It's about, you know, respecting, you know, the whole individual. It's about like, I'm doing this for various reasons with, you know, the economic aspect of it being one significant part, but far, 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 far from being the significant part, or even the entire, which is being kind of posited by, I mean, this is neoliberal stuff, right? I mean, if we were to, you know, sort of resurrect some of our chatting points on Breitbart, I know we've kind of stepped away from Breitbart because it's kind of dense and tough for us mentally to deal with, Doug. Let's be real. You mentioned it. I know it. It's true. Yeah. But, I mean, we've had some discussions on the show where we were kind of cooking with it. And we will be coming back to it again for sure. Yeah. But where, I mean, the whole notion of, like, you know, who benefits from reducing, you know, education to a finite set of technical, you know, curricula. Well, I mean, that's a monetized concept. And so it's something that appeals to the property, the people who have status and the people who support those with status. Whereas, you know, you're looking at something like pedagogy. Pedagogy. I told one colleague, you know, yesterday, I was like, yeah, the thing in the open house, just tell the good students to go to the theater. He was like, what? Theater, you got to say it properly. He was like, do you mean theater? No, I said, I mean theater. You got to say it properly. You put the wrong emphasis on one syllable. It's like,
oh, yeah.
It's a conundrum disguised inside of a paradox, my friend.
It really, really is.
And I just went on a tangent from somewhere that seemed like it wasn't going to be one. So please help us out here, bro.
Okay. I want to jump to 2023.
Please do.
I have one last article, which kind of wraps up the direction I wanted to take. And it's Jamali L. Ibrahim and Jamali. And they're talking about the role of STEM education in improving the quality of education in general. That's where they're coming from. And what they did is they dipped their toe into, and it was kind of like a meta-analysis, which was nice. And I like the meta-analysis.
I love a good meta-analysis. Yeah. Love it.
Anytime you can find one, you're laughing. And earlier, I talked about how we had all the silos, science, tech, right, engineering, math, all different silos, and you got to go across them. And they did this meta-analysis, and this is 2023. So this is 20, 25 years after STEM has really become a thing. They found 421 articles that fit whatever their criteria was.
Yep.
Or no, 150 published docs, 421 authors, 407 of the authors had only published one document in STEM. This is 100% something people are dipping their toe in and then getting out. It's, oh, I did this study. Where else can I? Oh, maybe I could publish it in STEM.
So it's right? It's sort of like a secondary ad hoc sort of field, as it were, which, I mean, a lot of the, I guess, probably well-earned criticism of education as a field is for that kind of reason. It's like, well, I mean, anybody can do an MEd, right? Like, it's a two-year thing. You can do it largely online. And if you want to kind of go for, like, an easy field to get that conference paper, you know, published in a thing, like, we're known to have porous borders, as you described, various, Doug, since, yeah. You know, the beginning of this thing even started. Good Lord. I'm an English teacher, folks. Anyway, so I hear what you're saying there, Matt.
Yeah, so it still hasn't broken out.
Like, yeah.
When you take a look at how most post-secondaries are structured, right? You can have a science faculty.
Yep.
You can have an engineering faculty. Do you have a STEM faculty? Nope. It's people from different parts of campus having to come together. So it hasn't broken down that structure. So even though the government's pushing it,
as a single sort of unified thing, as a new silo, as it were, as a mega silo.
Mm-hmm. It is. It still hasn't broken down that the other infrastructures that are already in place.
It's a silo with other silo disciplines inside of it, and the allegiance of what's inside the secondary silo or the primary, depending on how you look at it. You know, you're going to support your immediate colleagues before you support all these other sort of. And the engineers, as we've already discussed, are such singular cats, you know, to begin with, that trying to bundle them in, like, what do you mean mathematics? That's philosophy. I just use that when I need to build a bridge, and then I put it away. You know, like, it's that kind of shit, right?
Yeah.
So it's just like, it's like a bag of snakes. It's just like, oh, you know, it's like the Roman torture. One of the ways that they put people to death back in the Roman days is they'd, did you tell this to me? It's like they throw you in a river with maybe it's something I got from a news. No, okay.
It wasn't
they
me.
Throw you in a river. They throw you in a river with a python, a dog, and a monkey. And that's how you die. They tie you in a sack with a python, a dog, and a monkey, and they throw you in the river and fucking you get fucked up, you know, and then you drown. You get severely fucked up in terrifying, wretched ways. And so that's kind of the metaphor I'm getting here. It's like the bag with the monkey and the dog and the snake. And it's like, pity the fool who gets mixed up in that, right?
And that's it. Like, that could be the four different disciplines in STEM. And it's like, yeah, let's all of you get together and do something.
Right. Right. Ugh. Unless there's a common interest for those, you know, critters to be kind of working on something. It can't be imposed from the outside. It's like when, you know, an arrival, when the alien friggin' ships show up and each country's got their own one and they have to break down the silos to allow, you know, that lovely, brilliant actress to kind of do her full-on cunning linguist thing with the aliens. That was a show about linguists, cunning linguists, directed by a Canadian pre-Dune and shit, right?
Yep.
Guy Villeneuve, folks. I'm running on Steam as opposed to
another Steam. Another part. We'll run on Steam next week.
All right.
With STEM education specifically, it's not just the four disciplines that make up STEM. It's also education. So the educators get in there too. So really, when you look at five different disciplines and five different directions and five different ways of looking at things. Yeah, it doesn't surprise me that people come in and do one and then say, no, I'm done. Because I've written articles with people. Like I have a couple of, I wrote like 20 articles with the same person and he's awesome. He's one of my best friends. We get each other and we understand where we're going. We don't agree all the time, we rarely agree sometimes, but it doesn't matter. Like, we both respect each other and we get there. And I've had other people that I've written one paper with, and it's like, nope, never again.
It is worth the anxiety and stress on my personal life, thanks. Yeah.
Yeah, just not worth it. So I just wanted to give an overview of STEM education and where we're going and how we're getting there. And this is going to lead to more episodes coming up. So,
and in terms of where we were getting with about the half episode or so that we kind of just have sitting there in a pre-format, I mean, I'm personally one of the things, you know, I tend to talk smack about one of my former employers, TRU, fairly often, and it's meant just sort of as a critical reflection on where I've been. But one of the projects that I was involved with for a couple of years that really brought me a lot of joy, when I still think of it 5 years later, is a two-part workshop on STEAM. So we're talking 5 years ago now, you know, like 2019 and 2020, when the pandemic, you know, right before and when the pandemic was beginning. The last professional thing I did that was successful at TRU, really, was this workshop, like, that happened a month before the COVID closures. And it was about STEAM, and it was for female students, right? Girls and women, and LGBTQ 2+ as well, right?
Yeah.
Again, this is something that's very, you know, within my practice and with my time, something I've cared about a lot. Doug, I mean, you talked about working with engineers and people. So, I mean, we're sort of talking some smack about the discipline, but, you know, honestly, it comes from a place of love and care and respect, because otherwise we wouldn't be talking about it in the first place. We just, yeah, we're just friggin', it wouldn't even register as being of something to talk about. So, just in case, I've been using these episodes, you know, a little bit for my teaching stuff, and I just, like, on the off chance that one of my students or new colleagues is watching this, you know, it's sort of like, we kind of do some WWE style hyperbole on the thing sometimes. Please be advised, STEM colleagues, we fully appreciate and respect and fear what you do. You know, we're not just reducing your achievements to dopamine traps and shit like that. So just felt like I had to put that in the way of, as we kind of veer into the last few minutes of the thing here, bro.
Yeah. Just if anybody is wondering, I completely respect STEM educators and all that. I think that's wonderful. If there's something I have no use for, it's not becoming a topic of an episode.
Not even. It won't even just be.
So yeah,
on the shop floor. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. If anybody goes back and looks at our topic lists and all the stuff we've done, and you're like, oh, there's a gap there. It's like, yeah, that's on purpose.
It's an intentional gap.
Yeah, it's very intentional.
That's right. And if you want to get offended by the absence of things, then we're grateful that you're even looking at it closely enough to do that in the first place. Yeah. And then P.S., start your own gosh dang it non-tech podcast if you don't like it so much.
Yeah, or, you know, good luck getting a logo and a title that's as cool as ours.
I've been telling they're not kids, the Gen Z adults who I largely deal with, about, like, kind of potentially cool uses for AI as opposed to, you know, getting ChatGPT to write your assignment for you, is, like, with the visualizers, right? The visual tools. And so, like, when I'm showing, you know, a thing from one of our podcast series, an interview or whatever, and the production comes up, and then you have, and my pal Doug came up with this using various AI image generators, you know, and I consider that as a legit, responsible use of AI technology. And also my new academic chair, who I won't name, but he's an extremely cool guy who's extremely accomplished and practiced in his field. He basically, you know, he was like, you know, what are the outputs that we have, scholarly outputs for our department right now? And I'm new there, right? So I've only been there 2 months, but I was like, well, we got this podcast, this scholarly podcast. It's got a bit of a profile. He was like, great, that counts. And I'm like, really? And he was like, yeah, that counts. So it counts. This counts as scholarly outputs within the context of my work now a bit. So
again,
with great radness comes great responsibility, folks.
Absolutely. Speaking of that quote, because You just ripped off Spider-Man.
Right? I hope everybody noticed that. Yeah.
Stan Lee and John Romita, right? Like that. That's the quote.
That's the extra knowledge that I didn't have. Thank you, Doug.
Yes, no problem. Because that jumps us right to my digital clutter. I have a bunch of pictures that I've dumped there. So if you go to the website, which is analogtrope.ca/podcast, we have a bunch of images there. And one of them is about Marvel Comics, right?
Because I was staring at it right now. It's glorious.
Yes. And it talks about people in Marvel Comics that are great at STEM.
Basically, First Banner, 4 PhDs or 6, whatever they say in the movie.
It was 7 in the movie.
Yeah.
He didn't even make the list, but Spider-Man did, Iron Man did, Doctor Doom did. And the other ones I'm too old for. Okay. Ironheart and Moon Girl.
Yes.
I've never read anything by them, but... And even the picture is Spider-Gwen from Gwen Stacy from an alternate universe or whatever. Anyway, this STEM has permeated comics as well as every other part of our culture. So it's there. It's a real thing. Much. It just hasn't broken into academia in the same ways that it's permeated everything else.
Even the graphics are educational on this thing, people. And I notice Doug is on the list of about 12 or 13 people or other entities that I badger with random images on Instagram pretty much on a daily basis. I just see something on these channels I follow and just go, that's so stupid. You know, 12 or 13 people deserve to know this. And one of those images I'm glad to see is sort of at the bottom, I got that from Bring Back Alf, which is an excellent Instagram, which I recommend everybody follow. I also follow like 6 or 7 Garfield-related ones, but Bring Back Alf is quite good. So I was pleased to see the Alf and the Sigourney Weaver mashup here, bro.
And that's only because you were talking about the election down south coming up in a couple of weeks. Otherwise, I wouldn't have. So if people don't know what Alf is...
Garfield tattoo.
Oh, you got Garfield
showing that
tattoo.
In class. Anyway, that's
the picture is a mashup of an old sitcom character named Alf and Sigourney Weaver and Aliens. That sort of thing. It's clever. Go take a
it's
look.
It's funny because Alf eats cats.
Yes.
And Trump that was quite is like aliens are going to eat your pets, right? I mean, I have no idea. I was just like, oh, they had a debate. Oh, that's weird. Like, and now on Bring Back Alf, like, finally something from this election cycle I can agree with or care about even a bit. Exactly. Which just goes to show you my utter level of contempt for what's going on, actually. But make of that what you will. I think Doug and I see pretty much eye to eye on that. So are we talking about the word, question, and phrase of the podcast here, bro?
Yes. Word of the podcast is STEM, because I think we said it about a gazillion times. Yep. And that is the topic. Question of the podcast is STEM education everything it's cracked up to be? And I really wonder, right? If it's only about having a job at the end. Like, I've had that conversation with so many people. Oh, arts degree is the worst degree you can get. It's a complete waste of time. It's like, I learned more in my arts degree than any other degree in my life.
If you're interested in learning how to learn, if you're interested in, like, building capacity for finding meaning and context in other endeavors.
Yes.
I mean, that's what it's about. I mean, it's like how to think critically, how to advance your reading skills so you can crunch a bunch of text meaningfully. How you can bring in read and make quick judgments that are accurate about high-level, complex information from a diverse set of areas. How to navigate cultural, technology, literacy, as well as just traditional literacy, and numeracy too, right, if you're getting into the social sciences. And so, again, the things that inform these STEM fields, right, knowledge of high conceptual thinking, being able to execute on complex operations at, you know, with very limited knowledge. I mean, that's exactly the kinds of thinking that went into making math originally a philosophical concept, right? You know, abstraction emerging from tangible proofs, and then also from in terms of just, you know, moving things forward. So, you know, you need conceptual clarity before there's any kind of execution outside of that. And arts and humanities are all about conceptual clarity.
And I like the holistic nature of it.
100%.
I like the holistic nature of me as a learner.
Yes, because as a human being.
I wouldn't have taken a classics course. I wouldn't have taken a religious studies. I wouldn't have taken an economics. I know I wouldn't have, but I had no choice. And man, did I learn a lot. It opened my eyes. So for the phrase of the podcast, there's two of them. One is dopamine traps, because I really like that. And the other one is, that's an awesome way of putting it, Doug. I really like that, too.
No, man. No, I mean, really, again, we both have kind of our, you know, rhetorical things that we bring to this based on our things, right? And so, again, I think that there's a really cool dynamic on the show that I think emerges because in as much as we've got, you know, the shared experience of working at Thompson Rivers, in as much as we've got similar kinds of academic credentials. But again, I would say if that were it, we wouldn't have gotten as far into this as we have. And so, again, it's just kind of, you know, complementary areas of strength in terms of the presentation, content knowledge, and really it's the wider personal context. I've been telling my students, right, one of the reasons we're starting with the Indigenous Lit Unit is because the Indigenous worldview, right, largely, I mean, not to be pan-Indigenous about it or make unfair generalizations, but the emphasis is on the individual's relationship to society and nature and the physical setting with respect to the entire individual, right? So the medicine wheel teachings, being respectful of mind, body, spirit, and, you know, the relationship that those bear to the creator, right? And so, you know, starting from a perspective of a holistic view and then using that to inform going into individual needs and individual expressions of, you know, dealing with things. And so, you know, you start general and then you get into specific. You start with oral traditions largely, and then you get into, we're going into poetry, and then a bit longer, you know, short story, then a bit longer, novel, and then a bit further into like the exploded post-friggin' literacy world that we're in now with e-learning and, you know, web-based media for narrative. Bro, I don't know where I was going with that. Thanks, Doug. Thanks for the time.
No worries. This has been fun. I enjoy this.
Radical, like a cannibal, except not. Awesome like a possum. I've been saying that in public. So, you know, I'll be like having a meal in the server room, and I'm like, you okay? You need anything else? I'm like, nah, I'm awesome like a possum. And they're just probably looking at me like, there's a reason why this guy comes in here four times a week by himself to eat. Yeah. You say shit like that. Awesome like a possum. All right. Okay. I've actually enjoyed this, bro. I'm really sorry.
You too.
I'm sorry for the various, digressions. I feel like there's more tangents for me than normal, which is saying a lot. Was there anything else you wanted to speak to here before we shut her down, pal?
No, I already gave my teaser for the next one.
Yes! So, it's the part two coming up here. We're going full steam on the steam, and it is going to be lit. I am very much looking forward to it.
I'm wondering how many puns and how many ways you're going to connect the word steam into stuff.
Well, I mean, again, I've been telling my students, I'm like, everybody brings their own perspectives to this teaching deal. And for me, I'm going from a space where I've been dealing with curriculum, e-learning, faculty development, and very sort of functional-ish kind of stuff to now as an English teacher again. I mean, this is the first time where, even before when I first got into it, I was teaching largely technical and that kind of writing. Yes. This is the first time I've drawn a paycheck speaking specifically to literature. And so operating in that mode, again, where, you know, it's like you want to convey something helpful, but then everything you're talking about deals with, you know, the poetry and all this awesome, you know, narratives and stuff. And so having that as like the content area of my focus, as opposed to like learning management systems and learning outcomes and shit. I mean, that's all awesome and I love it and I will never stop loving it. But now it's like, okay, I watched the first episode of a TV show for the first time this year, yesterday. I watched The Penguin. You should watch The Penguin, Doug. You would enjoy the shit out of that. Now we're totally extra time. I'm just going to say, folks, Colin Farrell as The Penguin. It's on Crave in Canada. It's just out now. They're rolling out 1 week at a time. It's a Batman show, but it's the most grounded thing. I mean, I've never watched The Sopranos. I know that makes me a loser, but this is like what I would think The Sopranos would look like if I wanted to watch it. It's like, it's cool. It's so
okay.
There's a part at the end where the penguin's like,
don't spoil it. Don't spoil it. I'm gonna watch.
He's getting into some violence with a character in a car. I think I can say that. But it's like the direction is such, it makes you laugh your ass off while it's going on. It's like it's making references to Coen Brothers and shit. And they got some just really incredible people on the writing staff, as well as Farrell as the, you know, lead character.
Yes.
Folks.
Okay.
Slice. Hasn't it been a slice, Doug?
Have a good one, man. Yeah, it's been wonderful.
Take care, everybody. Until next time.